Double Tap.
This week on Double Tap. Diversity at MCM Comic Con.
The media is inherently gender bias and racist.
And the history of Angry Birds.
There were 50 plus games developed, and then this one game was just the one that people loved to play.
Hello and welcome to Double Tap. I'm Alice Taplin. This week we hear from Mika Tams, VP of Games at Rovio, the studio behind Angry Birds, as he takes us through the game's origins right up until its present incarnation in the new Angry Birds movie. But first, internet campaigns like Give Captain America a Boyfriend and Give Elsa a Girlfriend are becoming increasingly more popular, and consumers are having even more of a say in what we see on our screens and play in our games. Double Tap visited MCM Comic Con in London last weekend to see what impact this is having on the cast and creators themselves.
It was kind of as close as you can get to theatre when you were like live tweeting, and I kind of found it fascinating.
Paul Amos talking about how the LGBT community influenced Lost Girl.
You know, the LGBT community really strongly got behind the show, and then the show and the community kind of navigated the show in the direction that it kind of went. Because first did the pilot, I never really thought that that's the show that we were doing, that we would totally explore those themes. For me, it was for the communities of light and dark, and there was all these interesting...
Totally.
And, you know, that was just the lead character. But as we then explored the world, it was like that became fascinating. For me, playing, you know, like Vex, that I didn't really think I'd be exploring those themes when I set out to do the part. So the audience and the world and the confluence of events kind of navigated the ship.
The internet can't always have a positive impact. Kane Surrey, who is part of Shape History's own Twitter campaign, hashtag LGBT superheroes, which stars two white men playing gay superheroes, spoke about how calls for even more representation could drown out the campaign's real message.
I just think it's important as well to note that obviously there are two characters in it, and with two characters you cannot represent every part of society, so there's always going to be parts of society that aren't fairly represented with two characters, and I don't think it's fair to make having a black character or an Asian character make that the center point, just because that doesn't represent the wholly diverse ethnicity, you know what I mean? It's like, you can't represent everybody, so actually in some ways you think, well, you can't just have a token character just because. You can do the best with the resources you have, and you can go for the message that you're going for, which is LGBT superheroes, and I don't know, I don't think it's fair just to sort of plonk that in to make some people happy when actually you can't represent everybody anyway.
What's great about our show, I think, or one of the things, is that it's just never mentioned.
Elizabeth Henstridge, star of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and Willa Holland of Arrow both spoke about the progress of treating minority characters as just any other character.
Agent May is a brilliant agent, the best agent, the most amazing SO, and happens to be a woman. It's never kind of put out there that this is what we're doing. And that, to me, is the best form of feminism, you know, that it's equal and it's not kind of a big deal, and it's something that I think we're all really proud of, that we show not just that women can be strong, but that gay people can be strong, that it doesn't matter what race you are or what your background is or, you know, your nationality, or that we're just, you know, you're judged on your merit.
A lot of times if you have a character that is not... unfortunately, like a male white character or a female white character, there's always an explanation for why they're black and on the show, why they're Latino and on the show, why they're Asian. They have to have a story of some sort to explain that, or if they're gay or lesbian or transsexual, there has to be an explanation as to why. And the beautiful thing that the writers did on this show was they just introduced our relationship, said this is what it is, we don't have a backstory for it, and everybody just kind of accepted it, and that, I love that. So they weren't gay or bi because this happened in their life or this, whatever. They just were what they were, and I think that's so important. I think that's a huge step forward.
Back But with diversity can come the mishandling of issues. Recent campaigns like hashtag WeDeserveBetter show the backlash against LGBT characters repeatedly being killed off and denied their happily ever after. And shows like Sleepy Hollow, which recently killed off its black female lead, are no exception to this scrutiny. The show's star, Tom Meissen, spoke of why these deaths have more of an impact.
When you have a woman of colour in the lead role, it's not just a woman of colour in the lead role. It immediately means so much more than that across the whole of America. It's someone who, there's a woman of colour in a position that not very long ago she wouldn't have been. And it comes to symbolise so much more. And so then when something like this happens, when they kill off said character, of course it's going to mean an awful lot more consequently. It's something that I haven't really noticed as much over here, strangely. There are still lots of discussions over here about more opportunities for ethnic actors over here. But even so, the response to Abby's death, over there it was a huge thing. I saw that there was even it got so far as there was an article in the Washington Post about it. Because Abby Mills represented more than just another character in the show.
So what did we learn from our trip to Comic-Con? While representation is getting better and better, and the viewers are having their say more and more, there's still a long way to go when it comes to showing a diverse range of characters who are well-written and fully developed. To end, here's Melissa O'Neill, Roger Cross, and Zoe Palmer, cast of Dark Matter, on how their show handles both femininity and masculinity.
I mean, I think on our show we have a good representation, especially of all of the different ways that femininity can be expressed. You know, we have a young woman on the show, and we have a woman on the show, and we've also got an android who is like a female, and she's feminine in her own way. Like, she's got her own thing going on, and we explore, I can't say a lot about it, but we explore that in season two as well. And we've also got featured characters that come in, and like Three's wife.
Yeah.
Like she's a beautiful representation of a strong woman who's also very, if we have to use that stereotype of feminine, you know, because I think that's also challenging that as well. You know, what is the stereotype of feminine?
But also,
does that have to
you
be
just
that?
Have to have diversity, because not everyone's the same. And some women are softer, some men are softer, some are harder.
As much work as we're doing on trying to show a full three-dimensional woman, you know, we have work to do on showing a three-full-dimensional man. And all of, you know, we have as many stereotypes about what it is to be a man as we do of what it is to be a woman, what it is to be a black person, what it is to be an Asian person.
Like, gay,
we all
of those
have
things.
What that looks like, what we imagine that to look like. And so, you know, hopefully, as much work as we're doing on the idea of a female, I hope that we're just blowing down the assumptions of what it is to really be any kind of a person.
To be human.
No kidding.
Because being human again.
You know,
You can hear more from our coverage of MCM Comic-Con on their official Audioboom channel. And now for this week's gaming news.
The delay of No Man's Sky has sparked death threats. The ambitious open-world game was originally due to be available in June, but after announcing its new August release, Hello Games founder Sean Murray and Kotaku journalist Jason Schreier, who originally reported the game's delay as a rumour, both received online hate messages and death threats. Vote Leave has released a new app hoping to gamify their campaign for the UK to leave the European Union. Users will be rewarded points when they share key messages on social media and use these to climb through the ranks from cadet to field marshal. Jake Gyllenhaal may be set to star in and produce a film adaptation of Tom Clancy's The Division. The project appears to be in its early days as game developer Ubisoft is yet to find a screenwriter or studio for the film. Noel Brown has been banned from Capcom Pro Tour events for 2016 after making unwarranted and unwanted contact with a female attendee. The incident was caught on camera during Street Fighter V's Top 8 live stream, with the anonymous victim confirming that the player made non-consensual contact with her. And Team NVU has received a multi-million dollar investment from venture capital group Sierra Maya 360. team owner Mark Rufail has said most of the money will go to expanding his current staff, although the team has also recently announced plans to build an esports facility in North Carolina.
With many other physics games to compete with, and not many copies sold on original release, Angry Birds looked like just another mobile puzzler game that could get lost in the App Store. But with a feature film that's just knocked Captain America: Civil War off the number one spot at the box office, how did Rovio's quirky puzzler become one of the biggest mobile game franchises in the world? I spoke to Mika Tams, VP of Games at Rovio, to look at the history and future of Angry Birds.
Something's coming!
What?
What is that thing?
Greetings from the world of the pig.
I guess for a younger audience, it'll be fine. People who've played it will probably enjoy it, but I haven't played it.
Yeah, I'm really excited to go see it, actually. Yeah.
Just to see what happens.
Yeah, because it's a film about a game, so I want to see how they make it into a movie.
I've certainly laughed at the adverts, so I'm expecting to laugh through the film.
There's something going on here. These pigs, mysterious and weird, am I right?
That part about them I really admire.
The pigs are stealing our eggs!
Let's sail for Piggy Island!
What's it like going from a small app development company to, you know, a big, well-known game that everybody plays and everybody knows, and even people who don't play mobile games, they've heard of Angry Birds?
You know, it's actually really interesting because what we wanted to create is an entertainment for the masses. And maybe even from the beginning, it was a small mobile app in a way, but we were really thinking about how to build it as a kind of an entertainment brand rather than just the game. And this includes, obviously, from the beginning also, videos and all the possible consumer products and branded toys and whatnot. And obviously now it's super interesting with the movie coming out and doing so well. So, long story short, this is basically really interesting and really cool to be able to see that you can build something from a mobile app to be a really, in a few years, and actually a well-known entertainment property.
Tell us a bit about the first game and where that idea came from.
It's a well-known kind of fact that it wasn't the first game that there were 50-plus game developed, and then this one game was just the one that people love to play. I think that it's a matter of testing and fighting, and it actually works best with the audience.
Do you sort of know about where the actual concept of shooting the birds into the pigs came from?
Actually, I don't know exactly how that exact concept came to life, but I do know, talking obviously many times with the guys who came up with the original ideas, that they wanted to create something new, something mischievy in a way, something crazy, and it's kind of crazy, so why not? Birds, slingshot, shooting pigs.
And then, of course, the game got popular and newer versions of it started to come out, and the season packages, like when it's Halloween, having the Halloween themes, and when it's winter, having the winter themes, all came along. So why create these extras?
That's really just modern game development in a way. So what you want to do is that you want to serve the audience and create something exciting for everybody. If you want to have a really successful mobile games, what you want to do is to do it so that people have always a reason to go back to the game and find it something cool.
Why is it important to have these sorts of extras and in-game purchases and stuff in mobile gaming?
I think that there are two different things. First of all, this kind of all the extras, in my opinion, are services. So what you do is that nowadays these are not just games, those are actually entertainment services. And if you serve the audience, there needs to be something new all the time, and you need to listen to the audience and create something cool for them. And then the other thing that you were saying about the in-app purchases, that's the modern way of creating games and creating the game business, is to have the free-to-play element. So the in-app purchases are the way to monetize the game.
And do you think that that's a better way of doing it than having a game that you just pay for?
And I think it really depends on how you define what is better. Because the thing is this, that it's absolutely clear that this is the way that people actually like to play games. Most of the games are free-to-play games, and really the most of the successful games are free-to-play games, and our best games are free-to-play games nowadays. So as I was saying about kind of being prepared to serve the audience, and it's clear that this is the way that people like to play games.
From Rovio Entertainment,
becomes a game so intense, it can only be called Angry Birds Action. It's got everything you love. Explosions, destruction, explosions, and destruction.
And lots of slow motion egg-saving
action. Sparkly gems, gold coins, with even more explosions.
Obviously, there's a newer game, Angry Birds Action, that's out that's 3D as well. Was this always on the agenda, or has the movie created those opportunities to create 3D games?
With the action as it's one of the tools to market and make the movie universe to be alive, it was really an important thing to support the movie and make the game to look as closely as possible to the movie universe. So in a way, it was a logical step for the games as well to take that universe and the characteristics with arms and legs.
And you also have a special bit in the game that people can play during the film. Why do you want people to play the game during the movie?
Actually, if I may tell the story, is this, that actually we don't want people to play during the movie. We are using the action as a tool for the super fans to get something cool that if you play the action and if you go to movie, it's when you open the game, it recognizes in the seconds that you are at the movie and it unlocks the picks for you in the game. So the story is like this, that going to the movie, if you have played the Angry Birds action, it gives you tangible real-life reward, and we call it movie magic, is that see the movie and the game actually changes for the time after the movie.
Obviously, there have been other adaptations of video games as films, but they've never really done as well. What is it about Angry Birds that you think has made the film so popular?
I think that one of the really cool things is really to share quality of the production and then the story. You know, it's all about story, it's all about characters, and we have really great set of main characters that have strong personalities, and people know the brand, people been playing the game, and now they have an option to go to the movie and learn why the birds are so angry. So the story is pretty clear. Go to the movie, find out why the birds are so angry.
Yeah, point made.
With thanks to Rovio's Mika Tams and the team at MCM Comic-Con. Join us next week for an in-depth interview with Assassin's Creed stars Paul Amos and Jazz Duel. See you next week.
Double Tap is an Audio Boom production, presented by Alice Taplin and produced by Jamie Wareham.
Tap, tap. Double tap.